This hour is brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your own home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.
Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app and up on TSN 4. Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill. Day pulling in here, and we believe we're going to get to the worst of today. All right, it's been all set up. The Grappler's done an incredible job.
Mullen. I'm concerned that our first 40 minutes now, allegedly, it might be on it.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk online that...
Franklin weighing in.
Yeah. Franklin, our boy, our TSN colleague. He's a guy that, like, if you're in a bunker with him, you'd think, okay, we're good.
Franklin's got my back.
Foxhole sure. kind of guy.
Absolutely. I've worked with him on the road.
Right. Just throwing us under the bus and then backing up and driving back over one more time.
Never again. Not engage in any talk.
He suggested... The first 40 minutes of the show should be in the worst of. That's how bad the first two segments were.
Well, maybe he's pointing at the booth over there, because that's kind of where he...
No, I think he was talking about...
normally.
Maybe
he's
Jack
about
wasn't
me.
That good. Maybe Jack wasn't on point.
I thought Jack was great.
Jack saved our asses, because there was an audio problem in here, and Jack's first answer was approximately 10 minutes long.
And I was listening to it because you two guys were totally distracted.
Yeah.
And I thought, when he ends, somebody's going to have to pick it up here because these two guys are,
right.
are off digging the ditch in the back. I don't know what you were doing.
Yeah, I read something about, it wasn't a book or anything. It was like an excerpt of a book. It's as lazy as you can get.
Your readings.
Yeah, I'm not gonna get the book, but if there's something in there that I can get, like a Cole's notes, I'll check it out.
Yeah.
And it was about leadership and stuff like that and wearing the C like I do, being the captain of a ship like this, and how your attitude and your mood, how it has an effect on everything.
When did you read that? Couldn't have been any time in the last three years.
He bought the book.
Yeah. Right. I bookmarked it. The point being is, the message of it all was, hey, you know, be cognizant of that. And meanwhile... Here I am, kind of leading the show here, and the audio is going off, and I could not be more flustered. My head was completely out of the game. Pooley's trying to conduct an interview. Jack Armstrong's on, two reputable guys. Like, be honest, Pooley, you must have been looking at me like, this guy is shook, and what the hell is he doing?
No, I just took over the interview.
Yeah, you did. Thank you for that. Without you, we would have been in big trouble. Like, yesterday, it was only O and I. If that happened yesterday, the... Studio would be on fire.
Well, I was trying to say, like, let's just go to break here and figure out this audio.
For an hour.
Well, that would have been great. But it just wasn't happening. It was just a weird... Because I knew that you were secretly mad at me. No matter where that was coming from, you were convinced it was me.
Not after I read that excerpt. I would never do that. Because as a leader, I know my mood and my attitude, it matters, and it permeates.
Well, I think you better
room.
Go back and reread.
Do yourself a favor,
I think you better
okay?
reread that.
Do yourself a favor. Every morning when you have a coffee, read that chapter again.
Okay, I will.
Okay.
I'll bookmark it. I will read it.
Or the
day.
Excerpts that were appropriate.
Yeah, not the whole book, but like highlighted maybe two or three lines tops, and then I'm moving
Speed
on with my
read
day.
It.
Yeah, Twitter and Instagram are waiting. I've got other things to do. But I thought about it after. I'll bet you I wasn't giving off the best vibe. I probably wasn't making everyone else around me overly comfortable.
Everyone was walking to the edge of the ship and diving in.
Yeah, and then, of course, my own idiocy. It's my computer. And then because I'm gutless, I blame somebody else. As
Certainly
opposed
didn't
to just...
sound like it was coming from over
no,
there.
No, it was mine. It was mine. Because I'm trying to track Tiger Woods at Torrey Pines. And I'm afraid to look it up now, but last time we checked, he was on fire again today. And, you know, we had this conversation yesterday, Pooley, of, you know, a must-see live event. I don't know if you've ever followed Tiger around. I assume you probably have.
I have. I've had an opportunity to see him actually a handful of times live.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, including watching him warm up one day at the Western Open in Chicago, which was terrific. And one of the caddies tipped me off and said at that point in his career, he always took the first booth in the range because if he walked down the range, he caused such a stir. And so we sat behind the first booth about a half an hour before his warm-up would start. No one else in the stands. My three daughters looked at me like, Dad, what are we doing here? This is ridiculous. And all of a sudden, the wave came across the parking lot.
Yeah.
And
I watched him warm up at Augusta National.
It
was incredible. It goes from Sandwedge, I think Sandwedge, 8-iron, 4-iron, and this just... They were dropping around the flag like it was a joke. I was like, I've never seen anything like that.
That's actually a good question. How much would you pay just to have access to him warming up for half an hour.
Well, we were in the first row. We were
There's basically an option like that for Augusta. You can go to the practice rounds and watch practice. And
no, Brian, we were the distance from here to the sound booth.
Right.
Away from him. I mean, that's how far we were behind.
Front row, and you were watching.
Front row, railing.
Saw everything.
Right,
heard them talking, everything.
Yeah. And there's nobody walking across. It's just, it was terrific.
It just must be the strangest existence, being a guy like Tiger Woods. You know, being LeBron James, being Sidney Crosby. But like Tiger, it's an individual sport. He's so much bigger than everybody else, and everyone is just gawking at him.
Yeah, like when he goes to a tournament, the whole golf course is following him.
It just revolves around him, regardless of where he is on the scoreboard.
At that point, it was 99, 2000, 2001. He was moving about three holes at a time. So if you wanted to see him, you had to be four holes further ahead.
Right. And then at the range, unless you had intel like you did, you would think it's impossible. I can't possibly get close enough to see him.
Yeah, not a chance.
But I would pay a lot of money. Like if it was a silent auction, I would pay a lot of money just to be
at a range.
Just
session?
At a range watching him shoot. Like, honestly, like, because he'd be trying stuff on the range probably that he wouldn't even try on the course.
The way they move balls, I mean, right to left, left to right.
Right.
Just crazy.
Like, the full repertoire, like you said, he pulls out a sand wedge, he's hitting every single shot. Every shot. A four iron, he'd move that thing around.
The funny thing is, though, they've all got the little gimmicks, eh? They've all got the things they're putting under their arm or between
he
their arms.
He just uses one of those line sticks on the ground, and that's he just starts pelting balls.
Firing off a bag of balls. Right, even putting.
Like he's going to win this week.
You feel good about him at Torrey Pines?
Well, he should.
Yeah, he's in the running. But that's such a nerdy inside golf thing. Like, if you're not a golf fan, even if you have a fascination with Tiger from afar, but I would watch him putt. Like, if you don't, if you're not into golf, you'd be like, you're such a nerd, and that's such, like, why would you watch some guy putt?
I couldn't do that. I did the range thing, but I'm not going to the putting green and watching that.
You wouldn't watch him putt?
I actually don't even care if I ever go to another live tournament.
Oh, I like watching them play. I went to the Canadian Open last year. It was great.
Yeah, I just want Thursday, Friday at the Masters. I want to fly home and watch the weekend on TV. Because it's so hard to track. Like, you're just, you're randomly.
You got to know the golf course a little bit, right? Get to the right place.
Sure. Yeah. So anyway, you're on board with Tiger winning this weekend.
I am.
Well, we were discussing that yesterday, you know, the odds makers. If he's simply healthy showing up at Augusta, he's probably going to be favored, like close to
Could
it.
Be.
If he wins a tournament or two before he gets there, I mean, there's no way they're putting anyone else on top of that leaderboard. Like, Koepka won't be there, Johnson won't be there, McIlroy. Spieth plays the Masters as well as anyone. He will not be the favorite.
No. Well, the way he's been playing the last year, he's not even close. He didn't even make the President's Cup.
Right, but I think he was in the running at the Masters, wasn't he? Like, he always shows up at Augusta.
He did play well there, I think.
He always shows up. Like, he's choked a couple times. And our boy Nick Faldo, he supplied us with some outstanding broadcasting as a result of that. But
oh, my goodness.
There it is. All right, so Pascal Siakam off to the All-Star game. He's going to be a starter for the Eastern Conference. We'll touch on that with Kevin Arnovitz from ESPN a little bit later on. I was thinking about Brady, and I want to get into this with Michael Lombardi in just over an hour. With Eli Manning officially retiring, and he had his press conference today, and it was your typical Eli Manning event. Incredibly unassuming, consummate professional.
I'm not going to think about the bad times. I just think about the wins, the good throws. Coming out of the tunnel.
Nothing interesting whatsoever, though. He really didn't say anything interesting.
Could be 248 of the quietest million ever earned in the NFL.
No kidding, man.
First overall pick, New York. You win a couple Super Bowls.
Two Super Bowl rings.
Last name's
like,
Manning.
Think about it.
Yeah.
Quietly. How can you use the word quietly with that? But you do.
Yeah, and especially in that market, I have more of an appreciation for it. Like, you would think with his disposition, the way he reacts to the media, the way he deals with everything, he's been playing in Tampa his whole career, or Carolina, or, you know, Tennessee, a market that gets no attention, that has no coverage whatsoever. This guy has been in the belly of the beast since day one. He demanded out of San Diego, who had the first pick, shows up in New York, no controversy, nothing. You never hear a thing about him.
And through his career, he's been at every point on the scale. Like, he's been the worst team in the NFL, the middle team that blew it, the best team in the NFL, the Super Bowl champion, back to the worst team in the NFL.
Oh, yeah.
Coach is fired, GM. In his career, he's done. He's seen it from every and
that reflects his record, too.
You wouldn't know, in listening to him, at what point of that scale he was at.
Right. Yeah, it's even
exactly
killed.
The same.
You're right. After winning the Super Bowl, it was just, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was good.
You know, I leaned on Peyton to do, it's like, okay, we got it. He's like, give us something here, man. You're right. You're 3-13. You're awful. Can you throw a chair around and snap on people?
That's good.
Nope. And that's how you stay in a spot like that your whole career. He never got run out of town.
Unbelievable.
Never put himself in a position where anyone could be like, you know what, I don't like this guy. Very likable guy, very unassuming guy. But he also, you know, he said today that the idea of him retiring as a Giant, you know, meant something to him, which I'm sure it does. I'm not going to dispute that or call him on that. But he was asked the question, like, did you think about finding a different option?
Because think of all the other guys that have gone somewhere else to play.
Right.
Joe Montana.
His brother.
Peyton. Absolutely.
And he said, you know, he didn't really think about it, retiring as a Giant, blah, blah, blah. But I think he kind of saved himself by going out this way because I don't know how many other teams are calling his name. Like, if you don't want to be a backup, he could get a job somewhere as a backup for sure.
All day long.
But you're not going to do that if you're Eli Manning.
Well, don't you think that was the first step? His agent, like, kind of calling sniffing around and saying, look.
He sort of was that this year.
He was a backup. Daniel Jones passed him.
He did that. He didn't like it.
Yeah, exactly. And he made that very, very clear. But he can go with the, I never entertained it, I always wanted to retire a Giant, where in reality, I would guess if someone called him up and said, well, 16 starts waiting for you next year, I think Eli's probably going to take it.
Someone still may call him up.
Potentially. But it got me thinking.
One injury.
It got me thinking about Tom Brady. Like, are we 100% certain any team he calls up and says, I want to come play for you, they're definitely going to take him? I'm not. Like, we just assume Brady
is going
to call.
Well, we can go through some teams that aren't. Baltimore's not. Kansas City's not.
Right, and he's smart. Green
Bay's not.
He's not going to call Kansas City. He's not. Of course not. But I'm saying, let's say he calls
Tampa.
Let's say he calls Tampa. Or let's say he calls Las Vegas, the Raiders or whatever. And you get a team that doesn't feel like they're close to winning. Do you really want Brady there? If you don't think you can win, why would you want the pressure of bringing in Brady?
And he's also going to stunt the development of somebody else.
Exactly.
He's only going to call teams that he thinks can win. How many teams that are that close to winning don't have a quarterback?
Well, New England is the first and foremost, right. Clearly. The Chargers, as of now, and that makes sense. But
California makes perfect sense.
Absolutely. Like, there has been some talk, and I'm assuming it's just been, you know, off the cuff, but that if Brady called up the Niners in the offseason, they would get rid of Garoppolo for Brady to step in. I don't believe that for a second. Why would you ever do that? Brady's 42 years old.
No kidding. Who said that?
It's been out there. I mean, when I say I can't put a name on it, but it's this. The belief is Brady can still get whatever he wants.
Wherever he wants.
And I don't believe that's true.
Not at 42.
No, it's not. Like, he didn't have a great season. He was good. He was above average. I think he'll still be pretty good next year, but I could make a strong case for a number of teams saying, you know what, I don't really want to be the team that watches you fall completely flat, and that could happen next year. Secondly, there are other options out there. A couple of other free agents that are available that might be just simply better than you today. And secondly, if you're a GM, and Pooley, you can probably speak to it, man, you start pushing the needle and telling your fans that, okay, we're in Super Bowl mode now, and you're not. I don't know. Brady's going to get the blame. You might get the blame.
Yeah, everyone's sure looking for Mahomes or Lamar Jackson. They're not looking for a 42-year-old guy that can't even hardly move out there, as unbelievable as he is.
Mm-hmm. His best chance to win is right where he is. Go get him some receivers.
Yeah.
I mean, go get him somebody to throw to.
I think that's probably what he's pushing for behind the scenes.
This might
be
the leverage that he says, look, you know, I'd love to stay, but I can't have one guy to throw to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, give me Gronk back and give me a couple guys to throw to.
That would be my stance if I were him. But
I don't think Gronk's going to come back.
No, I think he's done too now. Like, why would you come back, man? You got out, right? You got out for a year. You've won Super Bowls. You're going to the Hall of Fame.
Everybody wants you to do PR and show up at every event and have your Gronk party and whatever he does. I don't even know what the hell he does.
You're not going to add to your resume.
No.
By coming back. You're not.
No. He's signed on with Fox. Like, he's already an analyst. He's doing stuff with the WWE. He's got a lot of things on the go. I don't see why. You know, it's his life, and maybe if you have such a passion for it, then maybe you do come back. But I think he would be connected to Brady. The only way he is coming back is if Brady returns. But I'm almost It's like I'm looking into the future here. I'm waiting for someone like Glazer or Scheffler to report. The Chargers told Brady, thanks, but no thanks. Like, I don't even think it would be that shocking. You know, I think the way the narrative has been building, some people would suggest that would be shocking, but I don't know if it will be.
I think the way he's managed his own career, though, we won't even hear that. If he chooses to play and stay in New England, it will be because he wanted to and he didn't look anywhere else. I mean, think of the way he's been managed. I don't even know who his manager is. But
yeah, exactly.
But pretty flawlessly.
Yes, Pierre's worked well. As long as he can control that message, you're right. But if the GM on the other end leaks it to Scheffler, you're not going to believe who just called me. Yeah. And I had to say no.
But think, yeah.
It gets out there, you know?
Yeah, but the GM on the other end doesn't want to do that either, because then if his fans find out you turned down Tom Brady.
That's a good point. Yeah.
It's not in his best interest to do it.
No. But you're right, publicly. You know, but I could see a couple of GMs being like, man, I'm not ready for Brady being here. Like, if Brady's here, everyone thinks we're going to win a Super Bowl, and we're not. With or without Brady, we're not going to win it.
Right.
And I don't need to answer for it. I don't need my owner saying, why didn't you win? You signed Brady. You told me we needed $30 million for him.
You think of the sway he has. He got Garoppolo out of there.
Absolutely. It was the right move.
It was.
Like, they went to back-to-back Super Bowls after that. Well, they won one
of
them. It
was, what, 4 years ago?
Yeah. You can't look back. Or 3 years ago, maybe. But you can't dispute that.
No.
All right, Kevin Arnovitz of ESPN will join us in about 10 minutes on the journey of Pascal Siakam, him being a starter for the Eastern Conference. That was announced last night. Are the Lakers definitively the best team in the NBA? What's up with the Clippers, Kawhi, Paul George getting some preferential treatment? Are we surprised by that at all? We'll get into that and more coming up with Kevin. Michael Lombardi, our NFL insider, in the 6 p.m. hour, and the worst of later this afternoon. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, Michael Lombardi, our NFL insider, in about 45 minutes. We'll catch up with Kevin Arnovitz from ESPN in just a moment on this story out of L.A. that, shockingly, Clippers players not named Leonard or George are not ecstatic with the way Kawhi and Paul George are being treated, as if this is a new phenomenon in the sporting world. But there's not much you can do about it.
So you're the head coach. Can you treat players differently?
Yes, I think you do, and you can.
So when I got
you got to be careful with it. But
when I got to Boston, my first game was on a Tuesday night. We're on the road. Won that game. Came back. Won on Thursday night at home. Friday practice at the Boston Garden, and because we practiced at the Garden all the time because Celtics were at their practice facility, so. You know, I'm just feeling my way out. I don't know anybody in the team. Practice starts, first 20 minutes. Ray Bourque is the best player on the ice. Like, he's leading every drill, full speed. And then I'm watching. After about 20 minutes, he slides over the sideboards, and he's gone. So I said to somebody, what's up with that? And they said, oh, that's just Ray. You know, he played 26 minutes last night, 20 minutes. So on a day like this, now this was right after the All-Star break, so early February, said, you know, he just gets what he needs on a day like this. and then, so I'm thinking, well, really, how does this work? Because I hadn't seen anything like that before in my career in Philly. And he was the only one that did. But on a day like that, rather than go out and cruise through 45 minutes or 50 minutes, he was full blast for the first 20 minutes. And then when he was done, he was done. And it worked. Brilliantly.
And it was totally his call when he was done.
Yes. That's what I mean by sometimes you have to do it. If it's like a guy like that who's going to, if he goes up to the coach and says, day before game, I don't really want to practice, and watch the result you get. And if the result is off the charts, then the coach is like, keep doing it.
Now, you're talking about one of the top probably three or four defensemen in the history of the game who played a ton. But it was load management long before Kawhi Leonard.
Right.
And I witnessed it firsthand, and it worked. Flat out worked.
I do think this is on Doc Rivers in L.A. to smooth it out. And it's more so, I think you need Leonard and George on your side. I think you go to them first.
But you think of some of the stuff Doc Rivers has dealt with.
He's seen everything.
I think it goes beyond Doc.
He's seen everything.
I think it goes right to Baumler. I think you saw that presser where he introduced those guys.
Oh, but that's the whole thing.
Yeah, he would go right down to the GM, to Doc Rivers, and say, whatever these guys want, they get.
Do you think Steve Ballmer cares if Lou Williams is a little bit bent out of shape? Like, seriously, the whole team revolves around two guys. They handed the keys to the whole franchise over.
Now, are they both, I haven't watched it close enough, nor are they both taking time off at the same time? Or are they staggering their time off?
Generally, it's been staggered, I believe. But there have, I'll bet you, practices they're both missing. Like, Paul George had a legitimate injury to start the year. He did not start the year until well into November, I believe. And Kawhi is Kawhi. Like, Kawhi could play another 10 years, never be back on, you know, the IR or any injury report, and yet he's still going to treat it as if he's coming off a season where he played 9 times. Like, he's just determined, I'm not doing it. And if you want my services, come the spring, because look what happened here in Toronto. This is what has to happen between October and March. But I would think the Clipper players would have the presence of mind to understand that. Like, look at what the Raptors went through a year ago. The same thing. Now, it's a little bit more difficult maybe because it's two guys as opposed to one. And once you get them both going, they become kind of one big organism where it's like we run things here and
right.
There's a class system within the room. But if the payoff is them winning in the playoffs and them winning a championship, why would you be all bent out of shape in January?
Well, I think the reason it worked here was because of the way Kawhi handled it. And the reason it worked in Boston was because of the way Raymond handled it. Like, he wasn't loud about it, or, you know, I mean,
right.
He
maybe it goes like a step further, though, too, where they don't have to take the team plane. They can take their whatever, because I've heard of that, too, where guys, it's gotten so crazy. It's get there whenever you want, just be on time, blah, right. blah, blah. And guys are like, what the hell's going on here?
Well, like family members on the charter, they're bringing
whatever.
Their,
yeah.
And that's the kind of stuff you got to be careful with. That's on the players. That's what I think you're saying, too.
Yeah, that can't happen.
Yeah, and that's why I said I think it's on Doc Rivers to get to Kawhi and Paul George first.
Is that what's happening in this case?
Well, I don't know. I don't know what is
because it's just
the reasoning
out. It's just
for
come out, right?
Yeah, it just came out last night. It's not being corroborated by anyone within the Clipper organization. But I think it's on Doc Rivers to get to the two players and say, guys, like, yeah, we're treating you differently. We're giving you more leeway. You're getting time off. Your minutes are going to be dispersed a little bit differently. But don't throw it in everyone's face.
Right.
Right, like don't pretend like you're bigger and better than anyone else. Right. And I don't think Kawhi Leonard would do that.
He didn't do it at all last year.
No,
like, it didn't come off like that last year.
And
there's
Paul George
stories out of Los Angeles. I don't know how true they are. That Kobe Bryant was just on a level where like rookies couldn't talk to him.
It took a helicopter to practice.
it's just I don't know if there's any truth to that. I'm not a Laker insider. I don't know, but there were stories of him in L.A. where it was crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, he was a totally different beast.
No, there's no justifying it.
No.
I don't care how good he was. You can't say to somebody, don't talk to me unless you played whatever.
He was conniving. Like, he would pit people against each other. He would go up against guys in practice where they had no shot against him, and then he'd chirp them and own them and out them and make them look and feel stupid. Yet, he won 5 rings, and I guess his argument would be that was my form of leadership, trying to get you guys to toughen up or try to get you guys to improve. I don't know.
I think he said last week if San Antonio wasn't around, he thinks that him and Shaq could have won 10.
Well, they lost to Detroit, so I don't know what San Antonio had to do with that. But I mean, but that's on him. Like, the thing about that quote that would bother, I think, people in L.A. is, Kobe, you're the reason they split up, not San Antonio.
Did you hear the chirping back and forth from Shaq and Kobe about that loss to Detroit? Shaq claims that if it wasn't for Kobe, it was all his fault.
Yeah.
Because all he wanted to do was win the MVP of the finals, and all he did was shoot the ball.
That's right.
And he wouldn't pass it, and everyone was standing around saying, what the hell is this guy doing?
Everything I've read and seen would suggest that's exactly what happened. Kobe just said, I'm taking over here.
The key being you can treat a superstar differently if he knows how to be treated differently. But if he's doing it just to be a superstar, then you've got issues.
Yeah, and I can't picture that out of Kawhi Leonard. Like, I can't be surprised with the Clippers. You know he's not playing every night. You know he's the highest paid guy. You know he's the most powerful guy. You know
and
that.
And you know you got a chance to win.
And you got a chance to win. Paul George, I can't speak to, but I don't get the impression like he's an egomaniac just based on what I've
certainly
seen.
Certainly doesn't appear that way.
So,
but, you know, you think of the legacy, too, that they've left now with Kawhi here. He was here 1 year. Did what he did. And look at the stamp he's put on every other guy. We just talked about Siakam starting the All-Star game.
That's right. Yeah, Pascal really...
What's the trickle-down from that?
He put himself in that spot just by being in the finals and winning a year ago.
Absolutely.
Like, he's doubled down this year. Prior to the injury, he was a legitimate MVP candidate. Top 10 guy anyway for the MVP.
But how much of that was accelerated by number two?
Oh, I think significantly. And even with all this noise around L.A. and the Clippers, they're still 31-14 on the season. Here's Kevin Arnovitz ESPN writer on the NBA. How you doing, Kevin?
I'm well. How are y'all?
We're doing well. We were just talking about this report coming out of L.A. that maybe there's some friction between players not named Kawhi Leonard and Paul George and players named Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, or at least with the organization, because of the treatment that they get. I can't imagine anyone would be surprised that Kawhi and Paul George would be treated differently than every other player within the organization. But do you sense there is some smoke there? And if so, where does this go?
I mean, I think there's something resembling smoke. And by the way, and the Raptors are a very tight-knit organization, but they weren't unlike a lot of the conversations around Kawhi in Toronto last winter, where I think you had a locker room that it has really cultivated a certain culture. And like very much, the parallels are quite similar. The Clippers were a team that were one of the best stories in basketball last year. They were a team in transience. I mean, they traded Blake Griffin, and they got Tobias Harris, and they traded that guy. It was just this constant churn, yet through it all, because they outworked everybody every single night, they found themselves in a playoff hunt when they shouldn't have been, and then they really gave the Warriors a competitive series. And I think there's a lot of collective pride around that persona. And here comes this guy who plays when he wants to, doesn't play when he doesn't want to, is not the most emotionally giving teammate. I mean, he's not going to win the Damian Lillard Award for fellow empowerment. But he is a kind of a quiet lead by example guy and has a very distinct understanding of what it takes for him to perform at the highest level when the games matter most. And that means, as he has said before, this is 82 practices. And I think if you're of a certain sensibility, if you're a Montrezl Harrell, where you basically only made it in the league by outworking everybody on every possession, that's the only reason Montrezl Harrell's playing NBA basketball, right? It just is sort of a sensibility check. It's sort of a very dissonant idea. And I think that will take some time. And I suspect there is smoke, and I suspect they'll get over it. Because in just the same way, there were voices in the Raptors locker room. We didn't talk a lot about it last January, but it was sort of like, you know, who is this guy? Is he a mercenary? Is he really here to be part of a team, or is he here to get his and move on? And I think that's just something culturally that a locker room that, especially in Los Angeles, which it really just really celebrated its identity as this scrappy, hardworking team. And then, as you say, yeah, there's no surprise. Superstars get treated differently. By the way, Davis and James are getting treated a little differently in Lakerland. And I think it's just something that the team has to come to terms with.
As far as the Clippers, is it just load management type stuff, or has it gone further than that? We were just talking where if you say to your superstars, don't worry about meetings and show up whenever you want, that's what really pisses other players off. Or is this just about load management as far as game time?
I don't have any specific reports. I haven't been around them in a couple of weeks. It could be more. It could be less. It could just be general mood. It could be, hey, a guy was, quote, getting treatment while, you know, other guys were sitting in a film room. I don't know.
Yeah, that's when it generally does get spicy.
I could do the old treatment the odd time when I didn't really need it.
Right. And then, yeah, you've got family members on the plane, and it's like, wait a minute, I thought we weren't allowed to do that. But he can get away with it. And anyway, you're right, though. I mean, there were a lot of kind of rumors and speculation around the Raptors that they weren't ecstatic with the way things were playing out. And they got to the bottom of it. They put it behind them, and we saw what happened. And I'm sure if the Clippers go on the same run and win a championship, they'll look back on this and say, oh, that was never really that big of a problem, as you would expect. But it seems like they're battling with that team in their building down at the Staples Center, and that was expected coming into the season. And LeBron's playing every night. And Davis, when he's healthy, playing every night. They're not going through the same process or the same journey. Based on what you've seen through about 40, 45 games, Kevin, do you believe the Lakers are the best team in the West? Or would you put someone else with them or even past them?
I think the Lakers are the best team in the West. And what surprised me, I think, more than anything, is the collective effort defensively every night. I can't remember the last time a LeBron James regular season team frankly didn't do anything other than phone it in, where I remember going into the 2015 postseason, I think LeBron's first season in Cleveland, they were like 19th going into the season defense at the end of this, going into the playoffs defensively, with the Hawks having won 60 games as the number two defensive team. And I really thought the Cavs were vulnerable. I just remember saying in conversations like this, there has never been a historic precedent where a 19th ranked defense can come out of a conference, you know, come and win a conference title. And lo and behold, that kind of became it's ironic. We're talking about it in almost Kawhi-ish terms, right, where it was 82 practices, and the minute a team needs to activate itself defensively, they can. With the Lakers, it just has an air of professionalism, having been around them a fair amount in the last month. I mean, that's the thing that is so striking when you walk into the locker room. I mean, you guys know. I mean, look, I'm not going to suggest that 30 minutes here, 30 minutes there in a locker room tells the whole story, but I think when you're around a team, you can glean certain just cultural wavelengths. And I just think these are just grown professionals. Guys like Danny Green. I mean, y'all remember Danny, right? Yep. Like, you know, LeBron's at a certain restful place where he's a guy who's always thrived in chaos, and that's even gone. Like, he's clearly just sort of, he's over that. And, you know, it's Avery Bradley. It's Dwight Howard on his best behavior, because he knows that, like, no one in that locker room is going to put up with anything else. Like, this is the last stop on the train, you know? And it's just, you know, and up and down the lineup, there are just a lot of guys who fall into that category. I mean, Rondo brings a certain gravitas. He's not great anymore, but boy, is he effective. And again, it's just, it has an air of, we you know, everyone's wearing their big boy pants to work every day. I think Utah is playing fantastic. And hell, let me tell you something. If that's a team that's going to have four 40% three-point shooters in their regular rotation and play that kind of defense, I want no part of that team in the postseason. And they have creators now where they hadn't before. I mean, Mitchell's really starting to get it. That was always the issue. You know, is at the end of the day, is a Rubio Gobert pick and roll something you're going to fear in a fourth quarter? And the answer is no. Mitchell? Yeah. Donovan Mitchell, I will fear in the fourth quarter. Now you've got shot creation, and that team scares me. And the Clippers, who knows? They're 14-4 with those two guys on the floor. Am I supposed to learn anything from a loss at Atlanta where it looks like, you know, the Agua Caliente Clipper D-League team? I don't know.
Right.
I mean, I never know how to appraise a team. The Raptors were interesting to me because I wonder now, looking back on last year's Raptors team, remember how we always used to say, hey, when Kawhi's off the floor, they're still really, really elite? And you kind of file that information away. It gives you something to talk about on a load management day. But I do wonder if we gleaned anything about their collective personality from that, because they ended up winning a championship. So I keep getting torn between thinking, are the Clippers should we pay no attention to anything other than those 18 games they played together as a unit? Or do we look at lazy losses where no one's healthy but they'd lose as sort of saying, yeah, but yeah, there still has to be a baseline of competence when those guys are off the floor. So I don't know what to make of them. If they were the best team in May 15th, it wouldn't surprise me at all. If they crapped out in the second round of Utah, wouldn't surprise me at all.
Kevin, we're swinging into the NHL All-Star Weekend this weekend, and a number of the star players have opted out, and that means they'll be suspended for one game on either side of the All-Star game. They're citing, you know, minor injuries or whatever. And they always say, well, the NBA does it so right. And do you remember a time when the NBA All-Star game took a quantum leap in the place to be, or has it always, in your memory, been an event that everyone wanted to be a part of?
See, I'm confused, and I don't mean to, like, challenge the premise, but wait, I thought all we do is bitch about the All-Star game in the NBA, how terrible it is, don't we?
Well, but here's
they all go. But everybody
the
goes.
They go. They cry when they get in.
Hockey's the baseline. I get you.
That's what we're saying.
No,
right?
But I'm always like, I mean, I got to be honest with you, I'm not an All-Star game guy. Like, I thought that the captain's thing kind of helped, and I remember a couple of years ago we had a really good game. I'm just someone who feels like unless the action's incentivized, it's never going to be very good. I mean, it's a wonderful, I think, it's a great conclave for the league, and I think they're bringing a little spice back to the slam dunk contest, and I think three-point shooting contests are inherently fun. But I'm someone who believes that, like, look, it's I think it. What I like about it is in the middle of the season, it gives us a little sports bar debate. You know, should Jimmy Butler have made it as a starter? You know, I like that aspect of it. But I've never been, and again, I might be the wrong guy to answer the question. I just have always believed that the All-Star game is pretty lame as an actual product. But I like the optics around it as a time to sort of take inventory and to argue about whether, you know, I like the arguments about Rudy Gobert. Why? Because it makes us argue about the value of defense. And can that guy really be an all-star or not? Or, you know, does Jimmy piss everybody off? Is that why he's not a starter? Because the other players clearly don't like him as much. He was ranked further down. So I kind of like what the NBA, I think, has done really well is they can't get around the fact that the game is never very good. But what they can do is generate the sort of narrative discussion around the sort of rituals of the game that give it a little more pop And I think guys like NBA is so eventy. It's like, I think the guys enjoy being there because it is sort of the exclusive. Like, if you're going to All-Star Weekend as a player, it's because you have something to do. It means you matter. You're relevant. And I think relevance is so important to NBA players. In a way, it might not be. I don't know the culture of hockey, but I think that's the other thing. If there's cachet in the NBA that might not exist in the hockey.
Thank you, Kevin. Always appreciate the time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
There's Kevin Arnovitz of ESPN joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. They will pay your holiday bills up to $1,000. When you lease or finance a new in-stock vehicle in January, visit MapleToyota.com. Yeah, I don't think he was getting what you were saying there, Pooley. No one's suggesting the NBA All-Star Game is quality. It's awful.
No, but everybody goes.
But everybody goes.
And everybody wants to go.
And I think he wrapped it up appropriately.
Yeah,
like it's a status maker. Right. And that's why you get Trae Young crying. That's why you get Pascal Siakam beaming. Now, they're first-timers, so it's a little bit different.
Give them 5 years, they'll be like, okay.
But I don't think they will be. Like, Kyle Lowry did not get voted in. He's dying to go, though. Like, Kyle's been there a handful of times. He doesn't have to go. He's an old man now, relatively speaking. He's had injury problems. Take the week off and just chill out. It's in Chicago. He's got no ties to that town. It's not like it's in Philly.
Right.
But he is dying to go, and he'll be disappointed if Raptor fans don't vote him in and push him over the top. LeBron's been to 17 or 18 of them. He's going, and he's going to be the focal point of the whole weekend. And I think that speaks to what Siakam has accomplished here. Like, he's in the same breath as LeBron James and Giannis and Kawhi Leonard, and there's only 10 of them that get to start, and he's one of them. Pretty incredible when you consider his journey. Where he came from, how he got here, his development. A few years ago, he was barely playing. Last year, he breaks out. This year, he's an all-star. It's pretty, like, I'm curious to see where he's going to go.
With every part of media now, it's so unusual to have that diamond in the rough. Like, everybody scouts everybody everywhere now. You used to get them in hockey. You don't get them anymore. Everybody knows about everybody now.
Well, somehow, they got Siakam at 27, they got Van Vliet, who was a free agent, didn't even get drafted somehow. Terrence Davis didn't get drafted. They got him as a free agent. Something's right here
good
in
homework.
Toronto. Pretty good homework. And I think what helps is their program tells these guys, if you come here, we're going to develop you properly, and you're going to play, and you're going to make it.
Well, we talked to them at length about the 905 when they were starting that, because they were doing modeled right after the Marlies model.
Well, isn't that how Masai started, just going to check out players, trying to find guys?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's how he got his start. He was just
he was a scout. He was
right.
A scout.
He was a scout for Colangelo here in Toronto originally, and he was heavily involved in, like, the African basketball community, and came over here and slowly chipped away, and he still got that core, you know, persona of finding talent and unearthing talent, and he's done a great job of it. And Pascal Siakam is probably the best of them all. But Van Vliet's not that far behind.
Nope.
Michael Lombardi, our NFL insider, in about 20 minutes, the worst of. We've broken it down into three separate clips. We're going to get to that around 6:25.
Pretty sad. There's three areas.
Three of them. Like, it got to the point where it was so long, we're like, we got to stop it and reset. Let people know. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, someone texting into 1050-50 asking when we are going to announce our first Instagram handle for the spring break trip to Florida. Well, we're going to do that right now. All right, all week long, we've been encouraging listeners to enter for their chance to win two spots on TSN 1050 Superfan Spring Break, an ultimate hockey vacation from bookseats.com. Friday's here. It's time to announce our first winning follower. It had to be one of these handles where I have to read it. Like, I don't even know.
You want me to fire it up?
Yeah, read the top one there, because I'm not sure how you pronounce that.
It's at C-Tex, or Tykes, C-Tykes, C-T-I-C-H-S, C-Tykes.
At C-Tykes.
Yeah.
All right, let me do the rest of the read. There you go.
What was so different? Like,
well, it's like Caleb is the guy's name.
Okay, his thing is at C-Tykes.
Okay, you got me. My bad. Phone lines are open, 416-870-1050.
Throw that in the worst of.
Well, I'm just saying, it couldn't be at Caleb underscore 83 or something like that?
I don't even know why people use the underscore, I got to be honest.
Could be Teich.
What the hell is
too.
That for?
Could be Teich.
That's what I'm thinking. It could be pronounced differently.
Could be Teich?
It could be any pronunciation. I don't know what his last name is.
I spelt it out. C-Teich or C-Tykes.
Okay, there you go. If it's you, Caleb, you know who we're talking about. That's all that really matters. Yeah, the underscore is a really, it's a
so
sneaky
stupid.
Play.
It's so stupid.
So Caleb's going on a trip and we're...
Well, he's got to call in, right? At 416-870-1050. He has 10 minutes and 50 seconds to realize that we're actually talking about his handle, which may be confusing. And claim your trip for four nights in Florida, including round-trip flights, accommodations, and tickets to see Toronto take on Tampa and Florida. If we don't hear from you, we'll move on to another very confusing handle on Instagram. Presented by BookSeats.com, custom flight, hotel, and ticket packages to events around the world, simplifying the way fans travel. It's a weird time of year at the All-Star Game because it's a celebration of the game. Every team is represented. I didn't see all of the Matthews, Anderson, Marner press conferences down there in St. Louis, but I don't think anybody asked them about the immaturity comment from their coach. And, like, I understand why, as much as I feel like you probably should. You're at the All-Star Game. Like, there's someone there.
It's a fluff piece.
No, it's not. Oh, it almost depends on who starts it. Last year, McDavid got roasted for, I'll bet you, 8 or 10 questions at the start of his presser on Media Day.
About how bad the Oilers were?
How bad the Oilers were. Some had happened with the coach. Some had happened. And he was getting toasted.
Really?
And I was standing right in front of him, and I felt bad. I was like, and he was kind of squirming. And that's what I was thinking about, another factor in sending a Freddie Anderson. He doesn't want to stand up and answer questions for why Mike Babcock got fired and, you know, all the different things and, you know, why the Leafs aren't in the playoffs right now. But it appeared from what we heard that it didn't go in that direction. But I've seen those last year with McDavid. I'll bet you it was the 9th question until it was about hockey. And he started laughing. He goes, oh, am I off the hot seat now?
Really?
Yeah, he was getting toasted.
Yeah, see that, listen, if you only talk so often, like the Leafs, Austin Matthews has not spoken since Saturday night when Keefe said his team is immature.
The other thing is, a lot of the big-time national writers don't get them very often, right? If you're from Chicago, you only see them twice a year.
Right.
And you may have only seen them once so far this year. So now you've got a timely chance to ask him about the immaturity comment, and you're a big-time writer for The Athletic in Minnesota, wherever. You know, Russo in Minnesota, one of the guys... They consider themselves totally national guys,
right,
are all of a sudden in front of them.
Well, and that's when you think it would come up. Or the guy in Chicago is like, I don't care about that. I want to see what he has to say about Patrick Kane scoring 1,000 points.
Right.
You know, and then all of a sudden that gets going, and you're like, how am I supposed to jump in here with the old, hey, there's a disaster you
it
left behind.
It depends on
you
how
Toronto.
It starts. That's exactly how it depends.
Yeah. So someone from Edmonton got there first with McDavid. Somebody.
You know, somebody might have got there first with the Leafs.
Yeah, well, it could have been a Toronto person.
Sure.
Yeah. I know exactly who you're about to say. I don't believe
here
he's down
go.
There. But I guess McDavid and Draisaitl only flew down there today and was just speaking to the media. I would, if you're McDavid this year, they're like, come on, let's go. Where are you, man?
Welcomes it.
Because I'm in the playoffs this time around. I'm probably going to win another Hart Trophy. Right? Like, I'm happy to be here talking about whatever
you probably just want to talk about hockey with him this year.
Yeah. Now you're like, hey, ask me about the coach. Dave Tippett, about our offseason and Kenny Holland and what we're up to now.
Well, if you look at the records of the Leafs and the Oilers, it's not like they're Oilers.
They're tied in points.
Yeah.
I believe they both have 57 points.
And everything
points.
Is just sunshine and happiness at Edmonton, and the Leafs are just in dire straits.
Well, that whole, if you have that many points in the Pacific, you're in first place.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That the group of five teams is all, four teams all grouped.
There, Zeisberger just sent out a tweet of Connor McDavid. Now, he's talking about his knee injury. So that's reasonable journalism, and that's kind of what you want to hear from, right? Because he has not spoken ever since the details came out about his rehab and the significance of the injury.
I'd like to know who the mentor was on that, who the critical voice was. Like, was it Bobby Orr?
Well, that's his agent, isn't it?
One of his managers who said, once you start getting into technical and start ripping it apart and putting stuff in there,
right,
you're never the same.
I bet you the guy was Gary Roberts and Mark Lindsay.
Who would say, keep it natural.
I bet, yeah.
Sports science has come such a long way.
But what can Roberts really, like Roberts can help you with it, but you're not going to ask him about his medical opinion.
You are going to ask him about the rehab portion of
you
it.
You think he's just throws barbells around?
It's the rehab portion.
What would he know about surgery on a knee?
Well, I'm not kidding you. I take offense to that comment. He's not an idiot. Like, he would be in that room knowing everything about that stuff. He's not just some guy that tosses weights around.
Okay.
Rehab portion.
That's what I'm saying. Do you think Gary Roberts is looking at an X-ray saying, here's what I think you should do?
Yeah, I do.
You really do?
I do.
You think he have access to the
MRI?
And
I'm not just saying that because I know the guy and he's my friend.
Okay.
He would be hand-in-hand looking with Mark Lindsay saying, what do you think about this?
Okay. We have a winner. Caleb called in. There you go. Shout out to Caleb. C-Tex. Michael Lombardi and the War Stuff in the next hour. Overdrive continues on the TSN app.
This hour has been brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.